Blog Talk Radio.
Tony Bellows came in there, you know, English fighter, came into the hometown of the defending champ in Montreal, and I'm pulling up all that info right now, so just please bear with me for just a moment as I do that. I just got home a little bit ago, so I'm still a little out of sorts myself. Waiting to pull up the more info on that particular fight here. Where the hell is it? He went in the hometown of Adonis Stevenson, and, you know, he gave an account of himself early, but then Stevenson finally caught him late and pretty much ended the show impressively. They also showed the Pacquiao fight on there, and, you know, I'll tell you a little bit, I didn't see the Pacquiao fight live, but I lost a little bit of respect for Brandon Rios after the fight. Now, I know a lot of fighters, you're competitive, and you get the heat of the moment, the heat of the action. But he was so ignorant to Max Kellerman after the fight. Kellerman asked him a question, you know, and he's like, you know, do you feel like, you know, I forget exactly how he worded it, you know, like, do you feel like you were outgunned or something, or something along those lines. And Rios is like, well, you know, what do you think? Something along those, or, and he's like, well, you know, I feel like you came in and gave an effort. He goes, well, you didn't answer the question. You know, you asked it, you answer it. And I thought that was just kind of a dick way to respond.
Yeah. Not cool, man. All right, well, we do have a ton of MMA news to catch up on. We got some big UFC event this weekend, plus one that we just had, the Ultimate Fighter 18 finale show, and not really much of a surprise there. I think who we said was going to win the co-main events there came through. Juliana Pena Jessica Rakovsky by TKO, which is sort of a surprise. Rakovsky is supposed to be the big-time boxer and striker, and it looked very good there. She lost at the very last second of round number one. So, couldn't be saved by the bell there. The main event was pretty surprising. Nate Diaz beat Bray Maynard, also by TKO from punches in the first round. And Maynard did not look very good. Diaz looked great. He finally found some knockout power with those stalking slaps, as they call them. And it was pretty decent, I thought. And here's Tom just in time to talk about The Ultimate Fighter finale. How's it going, Tom?
Good, good. I noticed we just started talking about the main event, and this kind of reminds me when I used to work on the psychic line, and someone would say, "Now, are you sure what you said was going to happen, or should I read that disclaimer? This is for information, or this is for entertainment purposes only." Oh boy, they got to give a lot of credit to Nate. He did what he had to do, but I think the big question about Gray Maynard is what's left of his chin. Just not sure where he goes from here, because this is, when we look at this is 3 out of 4 losses in his last 4 fights, 3 losses and by knockout. Not a good situation.
What the hell's the matter with that guy? Yeah, sometimes you just hit a wall in your career, and maybe that's where he's at, but, you know, Nate actually looked a lot better, too, so he's doing something. And like I said right before you got on, he's got some power now to that Stockton collapse, so it could be dangerous with that addition. I think he's never really had power like that.
Well, I think he was always accurate. And if you noticed, he really wasn't loading up on his punches, and for that matter, and neither does his brother Nick. But everything is accurate, and the timing and the speed was just what it needed to be. So that's the question. Was it a matter of Nate just stepped up and really did what he had to do, or has Gray just hit that point in his career that he just can't take the punishment like he could in the past? I think the jury's still out on it, but it's just going to be a tough road for him to come back because he was so darn close. I mean, even after the T.J. Grant fight, if he would have won this on Saturday, he'd be right back in title contention. And now it's really going to be tough for him to work his way back.
Well, speaking of title contention, Nate Diaz is now the front runner to fight Pettis next. Pettis is the one who came out and said he wants to fight Diaz when he comes back. And that was, you know, 4 or 5 different he was supposed to have between his win and now of winning of the title there. So, very interesting now there. Seeing him win like that and so quickly over a big-time veteran of the sport. He's a little younger than Nate is. And I wasn't aware this is the third fight of these two guys. I didn't even know they'd been in both fights. Was kind of crazy. So obviously Diaz has the trilogy over and done with. Probably not going to need to prove anything to fight Maynard again. But I thought that was one of the most interesting parts of this whole fight, that Maynard came out there in the pre-fight interviews and was like, "Yeah, I'm going to knock him out." So there's no doubt. He gets knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Ironic. So be careful what you wish for, I guess. Anyway. Chris Holdsworth also was in the co-main event there with Davey Grant for the men's final of the Ultimate Fighter, and Chris Holdsworth won by rear naked choke submission, pretty self-explanatory. You know, just the matter of style there, Davey just really didn't have anything to hang with Holdsworth. Held him down, basically. Held it down. The second round win there. He also had Desmond Duke win a unanimous decision over Peggy Morgan. That was a fairly interesting fight. Raquel Pennington had a decision over Roxanne Ferry. Started off there with Roxanne looking real good in her distance and space and all the right things, but then Raquel just waded in and does what she did best in the show and used her hands and job done there. Much better than last performance on the show. Then we had a disqualification for a knee to the head of the grounded fighter. That was Akira Korasani getting the win by disqualification. Maxi Volkmenko was the one that threw the knee. And it was one of those situations where they just talked about the rule change where the fighter might purposely put his hand down on This one, actually, I think not only was his hand on the mat, I think one of his hands was on the mat. Then we had Tom Inimaki, Rami Hayab, decision. Jared Russell, Walt Harris by unanimous decision. Sean Spencer beat Drew Dober by unanimous decision. And Joshua Sampo beat Ryan Benoit by learning. That's it. Now all that's left to settle as far as the Ultimate Fighter 18 is Ronda Rousey versus Misha Tate. And I think we'll see that later on this month. End of the year show. Then we have December 7th, we have a big event here in Australia, from Queensland, Australia, where the big boys are in the main event. Antonio Bigfoot Silva, 18-5, fighting Mark Hunt, in the Silva has some rough losses. Hunt is coming up some serious surgery. Tough loss after a real epic put him back on the mat. We have James Tahuna, who's 16-6, Sio Hua, 21-8. We got Ryan Fisher, 15-4, fighting Anthony Pope, 14-7. We got Pat Barry, who's 8-6, fighting Soa Palele, who's 19-3. And we've actually been trying to get him on the show, but the Australian time difference is a little tough. So we got Clinton Hester, another guy from one of the Ultimate Fighter seasons. He's 8-3, fighting Dylan Andrews. Also from Australia, and another Ultimate Fighter guy. Same season, I think. He's 17-4. We got Takeya Mizugaki, 18-7-2, fighting Man Ban, 18-11, a really old school Ultimate Fighter guy. We got Julie Kenzie fighting for her career there. I think this is win or go home for her. She might get cut if she doesn't beat this Beth Correa. There we got Kyle Michael Hayes, who's 6-1, fighting Nick Ring, another Ultimate Fighter alum, who's 13-2. And we have Richie Vasulik, 9-1, fighting Justin Scott, 7-0. I never heard of either one of those guys. Christoph Jocko, undefeated at 13-0, fighting Bruno Santo, also undefeated at 13-0. There's no one's going to go there. Then we have Alex Garcia, 10-1, fighting Ben Wall, to run that card. And Australia is always a great fighting crowd. And they appreciate boxing as well as MMA. They do a pretty good job. But we'll see how that goes. We got a ton of other little tidbit news pieces here to talk about. Number one on the list, Shane Del Rosario, UFC heavyweight, fighting for his life tonight. He's actually been taken off life support and was breathing on his own as of this recent article here, update of November 30th. He was removed from life support on last Friday night, and as of Saturday evening, he was breathing on his own, showing encouraging signs. Brain activity was registered, and Del Rosario also squeezed his mother's hand on Saturday morning. Basically, one of his training partners found him completely unconscious. I think it was that guy, Uncle Creepy, they call him. Ian McCall.
Yeah.
He had suffered pretty much what they were calling like a catastrophic cardiac collapse, and had something like 3 different heart attacks, so very serious stuff. And here it is, a catastrophic cardiovascular collapse, and this was at his California home on Tuesday. His roommate and his friend, they couldn't recall, discovered him. And qualified flyweight division, and he trains with Colin Oyama's gym. So he's in the hospital. You know, it didn't look good at first, given a really slim chance to even survive. But what I read, they used some pretty new technology to change his body temperature in such a way that, you know, it's supposed to kick his organs back to life, and it worked. So, you know, everybody's going to be pulling for him and hoping he does better and gets back into the mix. I don't know, like a lot of these cases with these guys in boxing ended up in comas. Cardiac arrest like this, you know, usually there's surgery involved. You know, it's a long, long time to recover just to be able to walk around.
Yeah, from what I understand, this was a congenital heart condition that they think that caused this. That there's something, I can't remember, I should have wrote it down as I was reading it, but yeah, there was something there, just a hereditary condition that of the people that are unfortunate enough to have it, they're not aware of it until it happens. There's no symptoms or anything, one of those silent killers, and all of a sudden when it strikes, that's it. So the good news is he's still alive. So let's keep him, keep sending some good thoughts his way, and hopefully he'll pull out of it.
Yeah, it's definitely a sad case. I mean, this guy's had a hell of a lot of bad luck. He said fights fall apart, and car accidents in the last couple of years. So, you know, this is just a straw that broke the camel's back for this guy. And, you know, if he can't return to fighting, let's just hope he finds something that, you know, he can still gain his health and, you know, still be able to speak and maybe be an analyst someday or something if you can't fight. Or, like you said, the best part is he's alive.
And,
so.
Yeah, and with some good news along the health front, apparently Stefan Struve has made some very good progress. So he has a few more hurdles to go through, but it looks like possibly he'll be training pretty heavily next year, so see how that goes. Ironically, those were Stipe Milosevic's last two opponents. Well, his two opponents back-to-back. What a weird coincidence that was.
Right.
You know,
talking about injuries and stuff, John Jones, whatever injury he has these days, he's still going to fight Glover Teixeira. Now it's going to be at UFC 171 in Dallas on March 15th next year. So it was 169, then it was 170, now it's 171. Which is the exact same weight I used to wrestle in high school. Jones has been champ in 2011, and this is probably going to be his most serious competition since Alexander Gustafsson, his last fight, and we'll see how it goes there. I definitely hopefully think Teixeira has a chance, but I don't think he's getting the kind of odds that Chris Weidman's getting going into his fight there with Anderson Silva again. But I mentioned earlier Anthony Pettis talking about wanting Nate Diaz upon coming back. He's going to be sidelined for 8 months, 6 to 8 months, for a torn posterior cruciate ligament. So he's hoping for 6 months, but probably going to be more like 7 or 8. How these things usually go. But he wants Nate Diaz. He says Nate Diaz has been talking so much. In his last fight, he actually looked pretty decent, but it's hard to judge against Gray Maynard, which is not the same coach for Gray Maynard. It's his quote. Pettis also said, I hope Nate works his way up to get the fight. Nate's just been talking for a while, even after his last fight, saying he's at number one. These are the number one and number two lightweights in the world. I mean, that's taking a shot directly at me. Now, belt is in my front room. It's there for a reason. So, Holly Holm back in the news again. She's actually already being wooed by the UFC, according to this article. But she's still got some contracted fights with her current promotion. But Mike Winklejohn is our trainer there at the Jackson's MMA camp. He says, I want to continue to make it a point to the UFC to how valuable Holly is. We definitely continue building her, setting her up for the future. Our goal is the super fights. Whoever has the UFC title right now is Ronda Rousey. But whoever has it when Holly gets there, that's what we want. And the article talks about they want, the UFC wants Holm now. They've already made that clear to Winklejohn and to Holly's promoter. She has a fight tomorrow night at Route 66 Casino. It's called Havoc out there in Albuquerque, I guess. And it's going to be headlined by Holmes, right? But this is from Legacy Championship Fighting. She has an out clause, apparently, for UFC signing. But I guess they just want to also get the best possible terms in whatever contract they finally agree to. In October, after UFC 166 in Houston, UFC President Dana White was asked about signing Holm. He says, you're the billionth person that asked me about Holly Holm. I was on the other guy, and some guy was like, hey, sign Holly Holm. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Everybody's telling me. I haven't seen her fight, but I keep hearing about her. Holly Holm. I don't know what she looks like, but I've never seen her fight, but I know who she is. And as far as Holly is, she says, I'm just focusing on this fight. I don't want to get wrapped up far in the future. If you start thinking the four fights ahead, well, you're just really promised that. I have this fight in front of me. From there, we go for the next step, but this fight is first. It's a very good attitude.
Yes.
Winklejohn also added, winning the fight, of course, is always the priority. But if I had my choice to win the fight in any different way, I want her to win in such a way that markets her and she'll look that much better to the public. Holmes grappling is pretty much still the big question mark, but you know, she's been able to win with strikes in each of her first five fights, and she does wrestle with some of the world's top MMA fighters at the Jackson camp. So Winklejohn says she's already there, she's that good, she's the best in the world, so... Yeah, he definitely believes in her. Now, from the best in the world, according to her trainer, to the guy who is best in the world, according to most MMA fans, Fedor Emelianenko. We all know that name, right? Well, he's not in the news these days, but his brother is still fighting, Alexander Emelianenko. Get this, well, he's in some heated issues. I'm talking about shooting people here. but basically, he had a contract dispute, Russian style, I guess. The MMA promotion legend over there in Moscow claimed he was, quote, unprofessional, and also unprepared for a bout with Croatian fighter Mirko Filipovic, otherwise known as Krokop, on November 8th. And the head of his legend company, Ruslan Suleymanov, claimed Emelianenko had to flee Amsterdam, where he was preparing for the fight, after beating up French patrons of a hotel, and then asked to postpone the bout after being shot in the arm. Now, Emelianenko claimed Suleymanov simply would not agree to his contract dreams and dreamed up the whole scandal as an excuse to tear up the deal. He also accused his former manager, Vadim Finkelstein, who said that Emelianenko was an alcoholic, for further attempts to sully his reputation. And here's the best part of this whole article. I have my bandits, the 32-year-old Emelianenko told R Sport in a telephone interview. Referring to his ill-wishers, though not explicitly by name, he said, they will profanity me over for so long, and then I will shoot them all. Suleymanov, a liar, Emelianenko said. He lied in order to cast a shadow on me. Suleymanov should have his mouth shut for him, and no one should speak with him at all. Suleimanov responded by saying he has no intention of spoiling Emelianenko's reputation, and as far as engaging criminals to deal with him, he said he, instead of saying no comment, he said, I leave without comments. These are not our methods, but it looks like Alexander. Let it rest on his conscience and open people's eyes in Russia so that they see and understand what this man is like. And earlier this month, the younger brother of Fedor reached out an out-of-court settlement with an elderly man who was hospitalized after a brawl with the fighter in a Moscow cafe back in October. And believe it or not, through all this, little brother is still preparing for his fight, upcoming fight against American mixed martial artist Eric Prindle, set to take place on December 22nd in the Siberian city of Tuyen. Tuyen. Tie you up. Tuyen. Siberia, I guess, where Emelianenko's going to end up if he keeps his shit up. Emelianenko says, I'm very close to my optimal shape today. I've beaten three boxers. I'm focusing on the kicking technique because I know he, Prindle, is a boxer. I won't wrestle with him. Emelianenko has a 23-6 career win-loss record. Speaking of boxing, we haven't spoken much about it since the beginning of the show. Segments for a while. So we got a big boxing story here, Tony. Also from Down Under, where the UFC is going to be this weekend. Anthony Mundine. You didn't talk anything about him.
I heard he has a win over a former legend, in Shane Mosley.
Yes, he does. Sugar Shane.
Smack or something in the fight. And the fight getting stopped?
Well, basically, he said he had back spasms, mostly, and he was unable to come out for the seventh round. He's 42 years old. Obviously, he had a little bit of a flip-flop on his retirement. And really, he's not... He hasn't fought at an elite level, and he hasn't looked very elite since his comeback. He had one win, and even that was sloppy winning. So, it was supposed to be a big fight down there in Australia. It almost got called off. They finally signed the deal, made it happen, and he pulls out in the seventh round. So it doesn't make him look that great, but it does make Mundine look a little better than he might have looked. Just fighting some bum off the Australian streets. So, he's calling out a lot of people right now.
Well, he's always done that. Mundine's always, I always said he was, a heavy trash talker. Never a big fan of his. I know it was right after 9/11 happened, and Mundine is a devout Muslim, came out and said that America deserved it. And, I mean, I feel that was just a little classless. So, of course, he put a lot of heat over that. And, he's had some good wins in his career, but I don't think he's ever been, a top-caliber fighter, an elite fighter. I mean, you figure he is one of the six guys to have gotten knocked out by Stefanski. And I'll never let him live that point down.
So, are you saying that Mundine is mundane?
Yeah, exactly. the guy's tough. I'll give him that. He's physical. But I don't see him as an elite fighter. I'd love to see him step in there with a guy like Andre Ward.
Or even a guy like
La Bamba, Rodriguez.
I don't know whether it's him saying it or just this article inferring it, but it seems like he's not exactly saying, give me Floyd Mayweather right now. By beating a guy like Mosley stopping him, actually. He's the first person to ever stop him, even though he stopped himself, basically, and quit. He makes the statement that, yeah, maybe he's ready to test himself against a guy like Alvarez, Canelo Alvarez. And then, if he wins that, then
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, that happens.
But they also mentioned Miguel Cotto as a possibility.
I'd like to see that fight. Well, my dream fought is highest middleweight, so I'm actually kind of shocked that he's fighting down so low now. But his early experience, he was a super middleweight. I mean, yeah, he fought Oxy and Madden back in around 2002, 2003. Because Oxy retired in early 2004, right around the same time Vinny Paz did. I remember a dueling article in Ring Magazine about their retirements around the same time. And so he's going down in weight, but I still, so if he's going to fight, you know, around 154, put him in the Floyd Mayweather sweepstakes. What the hell? Put Mayweather key off on him a little bit.
Right. Well, speaking of guys named after their fathers, Leon Spinks III.
Wow.
The headlining a Vegas card on December 6th. Grandson of the former heavyweight world champion. Presented by Pochiro Boxing Promotions. Throwdown at Sam's Town, round one. At the Sam's Town Hotel and Gambling Hall in Las Vegas, which I was never fortunate enough to frequent while I was there. But I do remember seeing it. Six professional bouts will be there, and the headlining fight, as I said, now Leon Spinks III. They have a four-round lightweight bout. He's 5'11" tall, 25 years old, nicknamed the third generation from Huntington Beach, California, and his record is 6 wins, 0 losses, and 1 draw with 3 knockouts. Grandfather Leon Spinks won an Olympic gold medal in 1976 and then shocked Muhammad Ali in Las Vegas 2 years later to win the Undisputed Heavyweight World Championship. And Spinks III is yet to collect an opponent for this one. But also on the card, 2012 U.S. National Amateur Champion Santos Vazquez, Reno, Nevada, who's in a 4-pound strawweight bout and has a professional record of 1-1 with no knockouts. He'll be facing Yosugi Ramirez of Las Vegas, who has a record of 0-2. That's a pretty bad first name. Yeah, Yosigey. Now, you can pronounce that many ways, but I can imagine he was made fun of as a kid for that one. Just a game. Say a little fast. Sounds bad. But the Pochiro Boxing Promotion here out in Vegas, this is their second boxing card. It's going to be the first to avoid gaming property. It may not. Now, Boyd Gaming is the direct competitor to Station Casinos out there in Las Vegas, who are owned by the Fertittas. So, that's their number one opponent out there for the locals crowd. Anyway, also, we got the news about Carl Froch. He says now he is unlikely to grant George Groves a rematch after insisting the 25-year-old, quote, blew his chance. So now he's instead looking to gain revenge against Andre Ward. And referee Howard Foster controversially gave Froch a 9th-round stoppage win over Groves in their WBA and IBF Super Middleweight World Title fight in Manchester. Groves has called on Froch to accept the rematch, insisting he has no other choice for the sake of his credibility. And mutual promoter Eddie Hearn has even said Wembley Stadium could be a possible venue with June and July date. But the aftermath of the fight, Crouch appeared to be willing to take on Groves again, but now seems to have reversed his standpoint with an eye on taking out Ward, the only man to have beaten him. So he told Boxing News, I don't think I need to fight George Groves again to prove anything because he was an unbeaten, young, hungry fighter, the best in Britain other than me, but I'm world champion and I've given him his chance, a chance I wasn't given to fight the best when I was at his stage in my career. He's had his chance and unfortunately he blew it, unquote. So, that's it. Go away and cry now. When asked who he would fight if he could pick anyone, Frog stated Ward would be ideal and admitted avenging his loss to the American was his motivation. And he wants him to fight over there in the UK. So that's it. He says, they're the facts. It's a bitter pill for George Groves to swallow. I took the victory from him by beating the warrior and the strong Iron Man that I am. So that's it. And I think that's pretty much all for the major news stories that I have. There is an open letter. I don't know if you read this, Tom, but Andy Foster, who's the executive officer of the California State Athletic Commission, wrote a lengthy open letter about scoring. I don't want to read the whole damn thing. It's online if you want to find it. But an interesting little perspective he has here is, you know, far beyond the 10-9 system, on how you're scoring rounds. He points out that these five-minute rounds, where boxing is only 3 minutes, makes it very unfit for the same scoring beats for both sports, you know, especially because so much can happen in a round, and it's hard to really score a 10-9. And he actually suggests not really getting rid of the number scores, but at the end of the fight, you have to say one way or another who won the fight. I guess he wants you to do that without tabulating the scores first. Just say it right away or write it down, which is weird. But he says there are probably hundreds of good ideas on how to fix this, and I don't claim to have a monopoly on them. But one thought might be that the 10-9 system is still used, but it's not the, quote, official determinator of who won the fight. The judge could score each round independently using the 10-9 system, just as the unified rules of mixed martial arts requires. However, at the end of the fight, the official judge's scorecard would not be numerical, but rather a question, who won the fight? So, I don't know how that's going to work, but when you hear a solution like that without any implementation suggestions, I don't know. I think he's just trying to make some press for himself or something. But he does call for a meeting, including all the stakeholders, regulators, media, and members of the public. But he makes a good point. The public just wants to know who won the fight. And we need to tell them as officials, he says. So, I don't know if that's a solution as much as a polite suggestion to work on it and discuss this, but I don't see how that's going to work. how about you guys? Boxing and MMA. Big, no numbers, just who won the fight? How are you going to do that?
Well, I mean, that's like watching hockey. I always go back to this, but watching a hockey fight or watching even a street fight, who won? Hey, this is that fought. Who won? Oh, well, I think this guy won. And I go, I guess it was a draw. I guess it was a draw. That's what you're going to get a lot of. I guess it was a draw. But one point I did want to make, I don't think that the legal system is as effective in an MMA fight, just because of the fact that there's only 3 or 5 rounds. Where, you know, in a lot of boxing matches, especially when you get to the higher level of boxing, you're going 8, 10, and in championship situations, 12 rounds. So that gives you an opportunity right there that you can do like a 10-point Moss system. In an MMA fight, I just think it's a little bit more difficult. You're seeing a lot of fights that are three rounds, 29-27. I don't see that as effective. What do you guys think?
No, that's a very good point. Very good point, because it's with so many more rounds. Yeah, that's definitely. I mean, I'm just digesting that, but the more I think about it, that is a huge difference. And I don't know. It still gets back to, as we were talking about last week, maybe it just gets back to having some rule changes in the first place that maybe would be a little more clarified, like getting rid of the whole unified scoring system that's used in MMA, you know, with so much emphasis on the takedowns and maybe allowing a few more stomp kicks or just something, you know, to change the rules itself. The unified system's just causing so many of these problems that maybe some of the judges feel that their hands are tied. So I don't know. It just seems like we get on this so much, and you know there's a solution, but we just can't seem to find it.
So you think we need to reengage eye gouging and fighting?
No. Well, now come on. Now to be fair, you remember the early days, there were only two rules, and they were usually adhered to. Usually, okay, no biting, no eye gouging, and then, thanks to Tank Abbott, no fish hooking. But after UFC 6 with Oleg Taktarov, and Tank was trying to fish hook his mouth, I remember. But it just maybe just some changes along those lines, I think, would help a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for a guy that's supposed to be somebody that you look to for advice on some of this, I thought this open letter was a little ridiculous. Like, you know,
yeah,
you could come up with some more concrete examples of how to engage something like this. And it kind of sounds like a ploy for attention more than anything, because, I mean, like, our discussion last week on this was a lot better than that open letter.
Well, I would say this much. On the bright side, At least the issue is being discussed.
Right.
And I think that goes for boxing as well. I mean, I think that you need to constantly keep thinking, how can we make this better? Now, I know that it seems like there's so much talk and there's so much emphasis on the problem. And at the stage of life I'm at, I'm tired of hearing about problems. We need solutions. I mean, I get the problems. But having said that, I think this is some steps in the right direction. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? At least it's being discussed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's important, of course. You know, it's just it's a very subjective business, judging fights. I noticed that we do have a lot of boxing judges scoring MMA fights. I don't necessarily agree with. You know, an MMA guy shouldn't be scoring boxing matches, and you don't see that happen, a guy exclusively doing MMA, judging a lot of boxing matches. So I don't understand why they can go over to do MMA fights when they don't really have much of an experience with it. From what I've noticed, most hardcore boxing fans don't even watch it. And Tony only watches it when he has to.
Watch a whole lot of it.
Right. So I think that's a big thing that needs to be looked at.
I think 15 years ago they didn't have much choice, because we didn't have a lot of MMA awareness compared to now. So they had to use boxing judges. But now I think that really shouldn't be an issue, and I think that, to take it even a step further, I'd like to see the State Athletic Commission kind of make it a mixture here, even among grappling styles, because to me there's so much emphasis on whoever's on top, whether he's doing any kind of effective aggression or not. And it's almost to the point where we get back on this lay and pray where someone will score a takedown, and then just stay on top. Stay in the guard and stay on top, throw a few punches, act like you're trying to advance, and hopefully the ref's not a quick stand-up rule adherent. And I think that the judges should have at least some jiu-jitsu background and realize that just because you're on your back doesn't mean necessarily mean that you're getting the worst of it. And I think we see that all too often, my opinion.
All right. Well, I know I sent you guys the video of Floyd Mayweather Sr. talking about Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd. And for those who didn't see it, obviously the listeners out there probably wondering what the hell I'm talking about. There's a video out there of Floyd Mayweather Sr. Talking about Manny Pacquiao's performance. And it looked like a comedy act. And he also mentioned that now he's nowhere near ready to fight Floyd, and he's going to have to fight somebody like a Guerrero or an Alvarez to prove that he can, if he's ever going to have a shot at it. But as you know, Floyd has also said that there's no way it's going to happen unless Manny signs with his promotion and fights for him for a while. So I know how close he is to Bob Arum, how unlikely that's going to happen. So I don't think he's going to end up fighting him, but, you know, he does have a few fights left in the Showtime contract that he says he's going to live up to before he retires, so it's always possible. But I wouldn't put it past him to save it for last, either.
You might. I still will bet that it doesn't happen. And now, let's be honest, 2-3 years ago, it was a 50-50 split, you know. Now, we've got Samblin just in hand. You know, he's got the advantage. You know, Pacquiao has the two losses. One of them controversial, one of them we iced out cold. So, you know, now it's the ball. Basically, Floyd has the ball. And will he let Manny play with it? I don't know. He has all the chips right now.
Okay, now how do you guys think? How do you think that Pacquiao's last two losses have affected the marketability of the fight, or the magic of the fight, or the hype of the fight, or the buildup of the fight? To me, it's taken a lot of the shine off of it. But maybe I'm in the minority. What do you guys think?
No, you're not in the minority. He's taking a ton of the shine off it. I mean, actually, a lot of the shine started going off of the fight. I'll say back around 2011, to be totally honest. That's when Pacquiao, I don't remember if he fought Margarito in 10 or 11. I know he had the fight with Mosley that was okay. You know, he beat Mosley, knocked him down. But it wasn't like, oh, wow. When he fought Margarito, he had Margarito beat up, just like he did Miguel Cotto. When he fought Miguel Cotto and he had Cotto hurt and beat up, he went in and closed the show, impressively. And that's right after his fight with Cotto is when we had interviewed Al Bernstein, Mitch and I did on the show. And Al Bernstein was really impressed with that performance, to the fact that he came out and said that he thought Manny had the tools to beat Mayweather, as did a lot of people. Especially Mayweather wasn't fighting a whole lot. And then it turned around that Pacquiao had to fight with Margarito, and it was like a ho-hum performance. He had to fight with Clotty, and Clotty didn't want to fight, and basically Manny threw the punching bag. Then he had, you know, the fight with Margarito. And he had Margarito in the same situation he did Cotto, and he backed off and let him survive the last two rounds. He didn't look good in the third Marquez fight. A lot of people thought he lost it. And then he had the fight with Bradley where, you know, he had Bradley stuck early. Bradley hurt his ankle. And he felt he was so ahead on the cards that he was showing, you know, some mercy on the guy. And he ended up losing the fight. Those fights, even before the knockout to Marquez, in my eyes, knocked a lot of luster off that matchup. And then more luster got knocked off it with Marquez's right hand. There for a while, one of the things I had said a couple of years ago, Tom, was I didn't see Mayweather really improving anything. I saw Mayweather, you know, just doing what he was doing. And I saw his training, like the same. There's a little pee pad on the mitts, which I can never stand. I don't think that's realistic. Worked for them. But when learning anything new, and Pacquiao seemed to learn something new every fight. And then all of a sudden, he hit a wall. And even Al Hartstein said that he thought Pacquiao was improving ahead of Mayweather. I find that is no longer the case. And I find that if they did fight, Mayweather would counterpunch the death out of him.
He just turned into a slow-moving tornado there for a second.
Sorry.
Your speech went into retard mode there. But we're all retarded. Oh, I heard it. But I know you mentioned Marciano. I just don't know what context it's in. We got you there. What were you talking about, Marciano, there, Tony?
Well, I was saying that the way the Mayweather through their training with the mitt work, they would train everybody that way. They would have Marciano doing the mitts that way. They would have, you know, Tyson doing the mitts that way. They had Foreman doing the mitts that way, that little tap, 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 you know?
Well, unfortunately, Thanksgiving, Brockton lost their first football game there with the statue looking on, so I don't think Rocky's too happy about that.
I don't think he is.
Thanksgiving. It didn't turn out too well. But I took mad pictures in front of my high school won their game, so that's all that matters to me. And for anybody that's looking for the Thanksgiving show, I had to do something different with it. I forgot to broadcast a lot like I should have done. So I tried to get a check back, and apparently he has to pay for money to do that. So I'm going to have to post it somewhere and then put the link in the description of the show. Anybody looking for that? I'm going to have that done tomorrow. And I'll blast it out on the phone too. So I listened to last week's show. But, was Thanksgiving? Yeah. Do a pre-recording there. Yeah, we did have a good show too. It was very, very well put out and together. So it's worth listening to. And although we don't have a guest this week, I'm definitely going to work on getting one for next week. I've had a lot of different promotions looking to get people's names out there, get interviews done, so I'll get someone. We do have a couple other stories mentioned. Manny Pacquiao, well, apparently, and this is just reading headlines here on this one page, it has another story about the next Manny Pacquiao will come from the but this does mention some headlines that have been elsewhere. Number one, Manny's in boxing. The tax court over there in the Philippines, and they just issued a gag order, so he can't even talk about that. That's interesting. His next opponent apparently will be known before Christmas, and the fight will be at the MGM Grand. And the work deadline of the Pacquiao subject here. Despite that, Scott just 500,000 pay-per-view buys. work over there in the Philippines to create a new boxing promotional company. So, Pac-Man Promotions. Speaking of which, Mike Tyson, I did finally get to watch Bootleg's version of it. Stand-up show there. Taping on somewhere in New York there. I thought it was pretty entertaining. I mean, I don't know if it was like the documentary that kind of put him back on the map after the hangovers. But, you know, there was some new stuff. There was a lot of talk about his fighting, which is funny now, but might not have been so funny then when I was but he talked about biting guys when he was a kid in fights. Because, you know, he got somebody had you in a headlock and you're in the middle of a street fight, you know, every now and then you get to bite a guy. So that was kind of funny. But then the part that really I enjoyed the most was how he talked about being in prison and seeing all these guys coming in and out of boxing. You know, and these guys were all banged up, black eyes, busted nose, cut lips. And he said, you know, these guys are always looking like they get the crap kicked out of them, they get their ass kicked, but they were happy. They were smiling. I wanted to be them. So he ended up getting the attention of the guy who did the program, and that guy came to visit him in the middle of the night. Then went on from there talking about how he developed a relationship with Cus D'Amato and how Cus used to wake him up in the middle of the night himself and, you know, just keep reminding him that he was going to be champ of the world. And just a lot of positive reinforcement, basically. And it seems to me, from the way Tyson talked about it, that Cus really had him figured out. And there was one conversation in particular that really proved that Tyson talked about where Cus kept asking him if he was afraid of white people. And afraid to get white people to keep down to it, you know. Kind of a unique conversation there. It was good all in all, and covered pretty much everything there was to cover very well.
Two quick results / stories that I want to touch base on.
Go for it.
Well, I didn't get home until yesterday, like late morning or late afternoon, and I saw that the Roy Jones fight that was supposed to happen last night in Philly got canceled. Looks like the whole card got canceled, because I noticed when I was on my way home, Celtic Warrior versus Road Warrior, and I said, well, the Celtic Warrior is Bobby Gunn, he's supposed to fight Roy Jones tonight. And I went on there and I saw that that fight had canceled. Bobby Gunn was a little pissed off, and he's now taking a fight with Glenn the Road Warrior Johnson.
Former guest.
It looks like Roy Jones is taking a fight, I think December 21st over in Russia, and I don't have his opponent's name right in front of me. So I went on BoxRec just to see that the whole card looks like did cancel, which kind of sucks. I mean, I didn't get to talk to any of my Philly contacts, but I'm going to try to get a message out to Rich Hansen, who is a big-time, you know, he's like basically one of those Philly boxing guys that knows everybody and knows everything about every fighter. So I'll see what inside info he has, and I'll let you know. It looks like we also, looking at last night, we did have a fight card up in New York, and a fighter that we've spoken about on our show several times fought on there, Boyd Nelson. And he's now won a unanimous eight-round decision. He's now 13-1, one draw, four knockouts. He beat a guy by the name of Gundrick King, who was 18-10 going into the fight. Boyd won every round on all three cards, 80-72. And I just want to go on here and just to see what else if we have anything coming up. Oh, I do. I also want to recap just a fight card that happened in Reading, PA last week. It was put on by Marshall Kaufman, who did the promotion that Tom and I went to a few months ago.
Right.
Let's see. Tom, when we went, I don't think his son fought. His son fought on the last card that I covered. So on that card, Travis Kaufman, the promoter's son, fought the main event. Travis is now being trained by Bernard Hopkins' trainer, brother Nazim Richardson. And he didn't look great in the fight I went to in August against Aaron Lyons. But apparently he did all right the other night, knocking out Jason Barrett, or Barnett, in one round. Kaufman is now 27-1 with 20 knockouts. And Barnett is now 14-15. I was curious to see what his physique looked like. When he fought Lyons, they said, like, train, like, really fast, was trying to drop weight really fast. And he left, like, a lot of, like, excess skin hanging off. He did not look, like, tight or ripped or, you know, almost to the point of flatty. You know, I'm sure you've seen in the photos that I've said when I covered that card. That fight, he was 233. That fight, he was 237, but I'm interested to see if it was a more defined 237. Also on the card, I think he was probably my favorite fighter. That was Khalid Bigfoot Whitmore. He was the guy that came out when we were with the big afro and he was dancing the whole way to the ring.
Yeah, I remember him.
He has another one-round knockout on his regimen against a guy named Mark Baltimore. So I'm sure, once again, his ring walk took longer than the fight. I said it was a good thing. The last fight I went to see him at was a one-round knockout. I said, thank God it was an intermission. Because it took him about 20 minutes to get back in the dressing room and stop and take so many pictures.
Yeah.
Let me just see if anything we got coming up this weekend.
We got a big fight in Chicago.
I know we got a fight in Brooklyn, too.
We've got a fight card in California tomorrow night between welterweights Joaquin Alteen and Francisco Santana. 10-rounder, and then the co-main event is Rustam Nagaya versus Ira Terry. And the third fight is Latif KO versus Travis Fulton.
Travis Fulton.
I know, well, because even though he only has a 21-33 boxing record, this Iowa native is known as the Iron Man.
Yeah, and I believe his MMA record is like 300 and 200 or something.
Yeah, he's got like 400 fights, not more, documented. And then probably thousands undocumented. But he's been around quite a bit, and he's fought some big names, both MMA and boxing. Not so much in boxing, but actually on this card, he's fighting Latif KO, who's undefeated. This will be the second time in a row he faces an undefeated fighter. Gerald Washington beat him by TKO in the first round last time out in October. So now he's fighting Latif KO in Santa Ynez, California, the Chumash Casino tomorrow night. KO is 18-0 with 14 knockouts. Fulton himself has 20 knockouts and 21 wins. So if he does win, usually it's by knockout. But speaking of Travis Kaufman, I just fought Travis Kaufman before back in 2008, lost in the second round by TKO. Chaz Witherspoon lost to him. The Fresno Quendo lost to him by disqualification. Jalen Brown fought him. So Jeremy Bates back in the day, Rob Calloway, Albert Sosnowski. He's been around. got to be a great guest. But I'm surprised we haven't ever set a show, but I know I can. My field, he fought back in his 1-2-3-4th professional fight. He fights undefeated in 5 fields. Didn't go well. But, yeah, that's an interesting fight set up there. And also on Friday night, as I mentioned, we have another card. A few cards, actually. Julian Love is fighting Juan Simon up there in Shelton, Washington. That's the name of that beer. There. We got Badu Jack versus Rogelio Medina on that card, and Nicky Day versus Carlos Cardenas. And a lot of this stuff is on our blog at fightingunlimited.com. Information on these fights. But the big one, I think, on Friday is has a lot of names that are not easy to pronounce. Christoph Lodarczyk, the cruiserweight, fighting Giacobbe Fragolini in a main event cruiserweight 12-rounder. Sorry, I don't have the records on here. Oh, by the schedule dates, they don't put it on there. They have to click on each individual name to get their records. But that's another one that's definitely been on our blog all over the place. So if you want to see the records, check out the articles. But then the co-main events, we got Andrzej Bonfara versus Samuel Miller. Light heavyweight and a light welterweight fight between Adrian Granados and Carlos Winston Velasquez. Really jumps out at me on the card there. What do we got for Saturday? Anything on Saturday, you know, Tony?
We got Guillermo Rigondeaux coming over off that big fight, eating Anita Denaire. He is fighting Joseph Adeko, a talented former world champion. Now Rigondeaux only has 12 pro fights under his belt. For 33 years old, he was in Cuba for so long, but he is 12-0, 8 knockouts. Joseph Adeko, former champ, is 29-4 with 22 knockouts. So that should be a big competitive matchup there. Let's see what else we got on that card. Computer's so damn slow tonight. We have James Parkland on the comeback trail. He's fighting Glenn Tapia. We have Matthew Macklin coming off that loss to Gennady Golovkin. He's fighting Lamar Ross. And then a young man that I don't know very well personally, but I know his management team, and that's Jesse Hardwork Hart, son of a former middleweight contender Eugene Cyclone Hart. And Jesse's really been climbing up the rankings. Just made his pro debut literally about a year and a half ago. And in that time, he has compiled a record of 10-0 with 9 knockouts. His last 5 fights all ended in early knockout wins. He's fighting Tyrell Hendricks, who's 10-2, 2 draws, 3 knockouts. So once again, just a nice little step up.
Can we already talk about the Zab Judah card?
That's what I'm going to next.
Big one there. They're actually showing a different main event on this one. I thought the main event was Malik Naji's Judah. But on Boxing, they're showing Sergio Pica versus Anthony Durrell at the top of the card.
I never looked at what up the way Boxing has him listed. I know the main event for that fight is, or the fight card is Malik Naji versus Judah. So Malinaji had the close loss to Broner back in June. He's now 32-5, only has 7 knockouts. Well, Yeah, we'll see how he does. You know, fighting the guy who's 2-8 to the 29 knockout. So the power advantage definitely goes to Gino. I think the speed advantage a little bit goes to Malignaggi. And it's just going to depend on who can impose their style a little bit better.
Well, on that very same card, we also have what is the Jesus fight of the week. And this one could be the Jesus fight of the decade, because Jesus is fighting for Dom.
Whoa.
Whatever.
Yeah, I see that.
That would happen. Saddam Ali, 17-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Jesus. What's Jesus' last name? Selig. Jesus Selig. Who's 16-1 with one draw and two knockouts. 10 knockouts. Jesus Selig. And his loss was to John Jackson, who was 12-0, and was for the WBC World Light Middleweight title.
This actually looks to be a really good card. I mean, looks like you got four 12-round fights on this card. We got Devin Alexander. This is one a world title. Just about a year ago, by beating Randy Barry. And Alexander, he's sticking in. He is 25-1 with a 40 knockout. His only loss was Timothy Bradley back in 2011. And he's fighting an undefeated fighter we had on our show a couple years ago, Sean Porter. Porter, 22-1 goal with 14 knockouts. We have Alexander Lara on the card. Let me pull up the info on his fight. This is a very interesting. We got Alexander Lara versus Austin Trout. So, Lara is 18-1 with 12 knockouts. But the only one on his record was a Paul Williams a couple years ago.
Discuss. until then, we'll leave you. Adios.
All right.
Feliz Navidad.